Welcome to the Agency of the Month, sponsored by Ardent MC on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Homeland Security.
I'm Gillian Brockhell. Our guest today is Rich Cirino, the Deputy Administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Mr. Cirino, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thank you. Good morning, Gillian.
So first, let's get an update on FEMA's response to Superstorm Sandy. What is there left to do?
There's a lot left to do, and I think one thing that's important to realize is you mentioned it's FEMA's response. We actually look at this as really the whole community response, not just a FEMA response. It's really bringing together all of government, bringing together the federal, the state, the local, the tribal agencies, bringing them all together. And I think it's important to realize that when you bring all those resources together, with just the federal agencies, we had 17,000 people there in order to support the governor and to support the mayor and the local communities, because I think that's important. But then once you add on as part of the team, not just the government aspect, but you really bring in the private sector and what the private sector can and did do, especially during Hurricane Sandy and Superstorm Sandy, it was important that we come together as a real team. And then on top of that, you layer in all the nonprofit agencies. You layer in, you know, what everybody from the Red Cross to the Salvation Army to the local nonprofit agencies that really make a difference in people's lives. And you bring in the faith-based communities and the wonderful work that they did, everything from feeding people to sheltering people, and bringing that whole team together as you have government, the federal, state, local, you have the private sector. You, in addition to that, you bring in the nonprofits and the faith-based community. That's a very, very powerful team. And that's the response in Superstorm Sandy really made a difference, is that team coming together. But probably the most important part of the team is the public themselves and how neighbor helped neighbor. And we saw that all throughout the response, and now in the recovery as well, is how neighbors really reached out to help each other, whether it was literally helping people save neighbors' lives in various parts of, you know, New York and New Jersey, up and down the coast. We heard story after story after story of how a neighbor would, you know, use a surfboard and put somebody on a surfboard and literally drag, you know, countless numbers of people and literally save their lives from the flood and the fire in some places. And then you heard neighbors literally reaching out and helping feed their neighbors. People who really almost lost everything that they had and then bent over backwards to help another neighbor. And I spent, you know, a few weeks up there right after the storm happened, and I saw it firsthand is how people really made a difference in other people's lives. So I think it's really the team that I mentioned of the government, nonprofits, faith-based community, the private sector, but it's also the public and neighbors helping neighbor and people being prepared, and those who were prepared made a difference. So I think it's multiple layers, and it's not just FEMA. A lot of people say FEMA's doing this, FEMA's doing that, and FEMA's really a very small part of the team.
Great. And how do you think you did during the storm compared to other natural disasters that you've been around for?
I think I think the team did a good job. I think we always look at opportunities and how we can improve. There's many ways and opportunities to improve. We tried some new things during Superstorm Sandy, as we've tried in other disasters as well. It's a constant learning effort that not just this disaster, but it was, you know, if we did things different from, don't forget there was Hurricane Isaac just a few weeks before, we learned some things in Hurricane Isaac that we put into place during Hurricane Sandy. We learned things in the tornadoes in Joplin in the Midwest last year in 2011 that we were able to put into effect. Superstorm Sandy and Hurricane Isaac. It's a constant learning experience, a constant building partnerships, building teams, bringing people together. And a lot of time, bringing people together at the table ahead of time. That in the past, maybe we didn't do that. Here's an opportunity to bring people that maybe hadn't sat at the table in preparing. And that's the bit most important part, is having that conversation with people, opening doors to people in the faith-based community that didn't have a voice, people with functional access needs, making sure that they're taken care of, making sure that youth and elderly are taken care of, and bringing this and really making this a survivor-centric response. And I think that's one of the keys, is how we can actually look at this through the eyes of a survivor. One of the things that I did actually my first night there and then continued to do is I visited a shelter. Once I got there the first night, very late at night, almost midnight, and talk to the survivors and see what their needs are. And then put yourself in the place of the survivor and see what it's like to go through, whether it's at disaster recovery centers, whether it's going to visit, as I say, shelters, but going to people in their homes and seeing the impact from their homes. If they're without power, and we were in one neighborhood that we actually, people had sand on the street about 3 to 4 feet deep, and you actually, they invite you into their living room, and there's 3 or 4 feet deep of sand in their homes. Not just water that came and went, but the sand that was left there. And that was in, you know, block after block after block of seeing how people have to live and deal with that. So there's nothing like being on the ground, seeing that, but then also how you can affect the response for that and how you can link up all the different agencies that need in order to help the survivor on the ground.
Great. And tell me about the process within FEMA between hurricane seasons of assessing how good of a job you did and what you can change for the next hurricane.
As I mentioned, one of the things that we do is we constantly do after action reports. We're in the middle specifically for Superstorm Sandy of doing an after action report for how FEMA did internally, as well as a much larger one. But so there's a couple of them going on. But for FEMA internally, of what we did, how we did, and we actually started that process during the responses, had people there looking at ways they were able to do things, looking at opportunities, how we can improve them. Sometimes we don't want to necessarily wait until we do a formal after action report. If somebody has a good idea while we're there, we're going to implement that as well and putting the processes in place and making it available for people to actually do that. But I think also doing the formal after action, going through the process, having people look and see what we did, how we can do it better, really is going to make a difference. And because there's always ways to improve, you know, whether it's new technologies, technology changes, you know, sometimes by the minute, it seems. Certainly every year technology changes. If you were to think, you know, 5 or 10 years ago that we could get information to everybody via a phone that they carry with them that's going to give them, you know, not only a phone message, but they can look up and they can register for help on their phone. They can pull up, you know, radar information. We can send them alert messages on their phone. You know, just 5 or 10 years ago, that we didn't even know smartphones could be doing the things they're doing. So it changes the way that we think. It changes the way that we have to do business and how we're able to communicate with the public. And I think that's one of the important things is how we can do that, how we can keep on the forefront and how we're able to get that information to make sure that we can make sure that help people have that connectivity. Because in the past, you know, we wanted to make sure people had power and wireline phones years ago. Well, now we want to make sure that people have internet coverage and able to actually work with some folks from our innovation team that we deployed to set up mesh networks in certain neighborhoods in the Red Hook area of New York and Brooklyn. We're able to actually set up mesh networks to actually put internet service in a whole neighborhood that we were able to do through innovation of bringing together people who in the past hadn't been at the table. So it's a matter of many different things, and depending on what the issues are at the time and dealing with those.
You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Rich Cirino, the Deputy Administrator of FEMA.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a hub zone contractor, solves difficult problems. Did you know that a hub zone firm can provide systems integration, agile software development, and program management services to implement complex situational awareness systems? The Department of Homeland Security understands the value. Since 2003, hub zone firm Ardent MC has been a key partner in delivering the department's common operational picture solution, which allows DHS to move information throughout the agency so the right person has the information to make the right decision when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response incidents. Working with DHS, the project was recently awarded the 2012 GCN Magazine Program of the Year. Ardent MC utilizes its HubZone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas like their Maui Software Development Center, which offers a 14-hour engineering day, giving their partners access to their expertise longer. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Rich Cirino, the Deputy Administrator of FEMA. So tell me more about these innovation teams. You deployed that for the first time in Superstorm Sandy. What is that? How did you come up with the need for that, develop those, and then deploy it?
Well, we've had a number of what we call think tanks over the last year. We've had these monthly calls where we have calls about new trends, new innovations, things that we can do. And through that came the idea that we'd actually deploy during a disaster. Hurricane Sandy came along, and we were able to deploy an innovation team. And when I say deploy an innovation team, it was actually just one or two people from FEMA that were deployed, but brought together a group of about 34 different people from the business community, from the private sector, plain citizens, groups that perhaps hadn't been involved that level, very interested in helping out at disasters everywhere from Geek Without Bounds to the Harvard Humanitarian Project to a bunch of other groups of folks that, would come in and actually look at some problems that, you know, we had identified, some that they saw, and then find creative solutions to real-world problems in real time. And I think that's one of the things that, really made a difference, is that they could go up and, as I mentioned, set up those mesh networks. We're able to help out in some of our disaster recovery centers and actually go in there and help with some power issues, because we were obviously, you know, had a lot of our disaster recovery centers, and find new ways that we could, you know, get more power to serve more survivors, to keep it survivor-centric. And with these innovation teams, one thing that's, that was important is that they were able to operate in and within FEMA's joint field office, but also somewhat, you know, is part of the team, but also have that freedom to look at new ideas and to come up with creative solutions. And I think that was one of the keys, is giving them really the space to do that.
And are there plans for more innovation teams in future, and will these eventually be at all disaster sites?
Well, I think one of the things that we're looking at is how we can continue this, how we continue to bring people in. In fact, last week out in California at Camp Roberts, in coordination with the Department of Defense is in the Science and Technology of DHS, brought together the innovation team to use the innovation team to look at some new ways of doing things. They had new technologies to look at. But the innovation wasn't just technology. It was how we can look at new ideas. In fact, some of the ideas that came out of the innovation team was how we're able to look at how we utilize our disaster recovery centers and how they organize the best way, how we do what we call community relations, going out, reaching out to the public, and using some new tools and new ways of organizing. So it's bringing a new, fresh set of eyes for people who are very interested in disaster and emergency response and looking at it through a different lens. And having that different lens is ultimately going to benefit the survivor in the community, and that's what we're looking to do.
And now, social media was also a huge part of what I noticed in the response to Superstorm Sandy. Tell me more about what FEMA is doing and what it plans to do in the future.
But social media is another tool in the toolbox of how we're able to communicate with people, but it's not just communicating to them, it's listening to them as well, it's gathering information from folks as well. I think that's one of the keys, is how we can listen to folks through whatever medium that would be. One of the keys in listening to folks, whether it's through a Twitter page or whether it's listening to them on Facebook, whatever method that people utilize to communicate with each other, it's important for us to utilize that. It's very valuable information that comes along with social media as well. As well as looking some of the trends as the number of people are looking for help, they're also able to send in like some pictures and some videos, so we get real-time updates of what's going on. So I think it's important, it's a very important tool for us to utilize to look and to see what people are saying and, importantly, what their needs are and how we can meet that those needs. Also helps in sometimes in rumor control as well, is letting people know this is what people are saying, but also this is the facts. And having other people as part of the team actually listening and looking at that as well. And that's what we found. A lot of people as part of the team, all hearing the same, not just the same message, but getting ground truth, and this is what's really happening.
And with all this communication, how do you make sure that you're listening to the right people and not wasting time just communicating, but not deploying and delivering your mission with other agencies and with the people you're helping?
Well, I think one part of this is making sure it's coordinated as well. There's a way that we're able to coordinate people. We have our National Response Coordination Center. That's a place that brings people together. It happened to be housed at FEMA, but it's not FEMA's. It's the National Response Coordination Center, where people are able to come together, share a lot of information, not just on social media, but on the response as well, as how we, what we're sending, where it's going, and making sure that we're not duplicating efforts to make sure we're there to meet the needs the survivors. Social media is another tool and able to do that. We're able to actually see what's going on the ground. And, you know, you get one thing that says one thing, but you get 1,000 that say something else. That's good enough for me when you have 1,000 things saying the same thing of what's really going on there.
You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Rich Cirino, the Deputy Administrator of FEMA.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a hub zone contractor, solves difficult problems. Did you know that a hub zone firm can provide systems integration, agile software development, and program management services to implement complex situational awareness systems? The Department of Homeland Security understands the value. Since 2003, hub zone firm Ardent MC has been a key partner in delivering the department's common operational picture solution, which allows DHS to move information throughout the agency so the right person has the information to make the right decision when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response incidents. Working with DHS, the project was recently awarded the 2012 GCN Magazine Program of the Year. Ardent MC utilizes its HubZone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas like their Maui Software Development Center, which offers a 14-hour engineering day, giving their partners access to their expertise longer. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Rich Cirino, the Deputy Administrator of FEMA. Tell me more about these think tank calls. I just watched one of them. How often do you do them, and who's there, and what are you talking about?
Well, on many different ones. One we just had recently was held at the White House, but it was one that we mainly talked about innovation during Hurricane Sandy. And we've done numerous other ones, one we did on folks with functional access needs, and looking at how issues that come up specifically affecting that community. And out of that meeting, we had a phone call, and the phone call we have a number of people in the room on that subject matter experts, but we opened the call up to anybody and everybody. In fact, we had over 800 people on our last call that can call in and ask questions, but they cannot just call in. They're actually able to call, also send messages on Twitter. And by Twitter, we can, you know, monitor that, and we can actually see the questions that people are coming with and see your sort of trends. In fact, during the last call we had, it was the fourth most trending conversation on Twitter for the 2 hours that we were on. So there's a lot of interest, and it was, you know, tens of thousands of people that were on and then, you know, caused so many impressions after that. So we had a large following. But it's an opportunity for anybody, not just people in emergency management, to listen, but more importantly, call up, ask questions, share information. We did one in Joplin on the year anniversary of the tornado went through Joplin, and we had people calling in from around the country on recovery issues, and they had the opportunity to talk to the city manager that did a great job. They had the opportunity to talk to the city attorney from somebody from Michigan and a city manager from Florida, asking another city manager direct questions. Also had some of the citizen volunteers that actually helped drive some of the housing issues and missions going on in Joplin, and people who were dealing with either in preparedness for another disaster or dealing with their own disaster. How did you do that? It's helping connect those sorts of folks as well. We did one on new tech communications and new high technology and how we can do that. Now that actually came old technology, was to look at how we can use amateur radio operators during a disaster, something that used to be very common in the emergency field years ago. It sort of slipped favor, but now people realize how important that is if everything else goes, to have those amateur radio operators.
We think radio is very important, too.
Radio is very important, you know, and we love radio. But I think it's key. You know, the amateur radio operators as well as the professional radio operators are actually key in how we're able to communicate with the public, but also get information back and forth of all of this field. We found that amateur radio systems actually always, you know, have always worked during disasters. So it's another very important thing, and it sort of has reinvigorated that community. So the think tanks are an opportunity to bring people together that perhaps haven't had a seat at the table, but also exchange ideas and to hear new ideas and suggestions as well, not just for FEMA, but the whole community.
And so are all citizens invited to take part in these think tank calls, or is it just the interested stakeholders?
No, it's open to anybody. Anybody can call in the number that's available. We've been holding the calls every other month or so on various topics, and we welcome people to anybody to get on the phone. We also welcome people to tweet the messages or on Facebook. Or we also have for people with functional access needs, for people to get in to get questions in. So it's really a way to have a conversation. In fact, last time we hit, the secretary joined us, as well as the president's senior advisor. So it's having, you know, people that are in the room, not so much to answer the questions, but to hear what people have and to hear ideas that people have and to bring people together. And I think that's probably the biggest key, is to bring people together. Because this is really is another way of reaching out to what we call the whole community, is bringing that community together.
You have another new way you're reaching out to the community. What is the FEMA Corps?
FEMA Corps is just a little bit about, not even a year, about a year old now. And it's a way for people, specifically young people, 18 to 24 years old, to actually give service to the country. That they can come in and not earn a lot of money. In fact, they get a very, very small stipend for the year. And then during that period of time, they actually do service, and they're out. Now we have over 400 members that are out in the disaster right now, dealing with Hurricane Sandy in New York and New Jersey, doing really frontline work, making a difference in people's lives. And this program is going to grow to 1,600 people over the next couple of years, and they do 10 months of service to the community. And at the end of that 10 months, they can sign up for another year if they wish, or they can move on. But also, it's an opportunity for people to look at emergency management as a possible career opportunity. But at the same time, it's really a service to the country. And that's an important, another opportunity for young people to do service to the country, in specifically, in this case, in disaster response. We saw, you know, when I was traveling around the country to the fires in Ballstrup, Texas in 2011, to the floods up and down the Mississippi River, to Hurricane Irene, to the tornadoes in Tuscaloosa, to the tornadoes in Joplin, in Alabama and Mississippi, to actually see the work that young people were doing through AmeriCorps. And we partnered with AmeriCorps and National Corporation for Community Service to actually see how we can actually work together with them, to actually see, and that's how FEMA Corps was born, is an opportunity for young people to do 10 months of service to the country in the needs, meeting the needs of the disaster survivor.
How do budget pressures like sequestration and the continuing resolution affect mission delivery? How do you work around it?
One of the things that we will do, we're always going to respond to disasters. The budget, you know, with sequestration and budget cuts, we have to work through those. With sequestration, you know, it cuts that may occur because of that could cause, you know, decrease in grants to local communities, specifically to local fire departments and to the emergency responders. It's just one example of the cuts of sequestration that could happen.
And what has been your greatest challenge while working at FEMA?
I think the greatest challenge working at FEMA has been how to, and I wouldn't call it a challenge, I actually look at this as an opportunity, that to bring people together, to actually bring people together that in the past maybe haven't sat together in the same room before the disaster. There's an old saying that I said probably 15 years before I came to FEMA, which you don't want to be exchanging business cards at the scene of disaster. And that's something that we don't want people to do. We want people to know each other, have relationships with each other ahead of time, because that's going to make the disaster go much smoother. Because I think one thing that's important to remember, that whether it's the federal, state, local government, the volunteer agencies, the private sector, everybody wants to do the right thing, and it's really for the survivor.
And so what's next for FEMA?
I think what's next for FEMA is we are always looking for new opportunities. I think, and with the current situation with the budget, we have to be able to be there to meet the needs of the survivors for the next disaster. We're going to be there to meet the needs of the survivors and the communities after Hurricane Sandy, after Hurricane Isaac, after Joplin. We're not going to be there just for the first few weeks. We're going to be there, in some cases, for years. We've been there for years. We'll continue to be there for years to meet the needs of the survivors, meet the needs of the community, until the job is done.
Mr. Serino, thank you so much for joining us today on the Agency of the Month.
Okay, thank you, Jillian. It was a pleasure being here.
Rich Serino is Deputy Administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. I'm Gillian Brockhill.
You've been listening to the Agency of the Month, sponsored by Ardent MC on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Homeland Security. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.